Fred Film Radio.
Fred Film Radio, this is Nicola Comonti here, the second edition of Brief, the Brussels International Film Festival, and today I'm joined by Sarah Summa and Ben Rosler. Welcome, guys.
Thank you. Hello.
Thanks, hello.
So you're here for your first feature, and we're talking about The Last to See Them. It's a very, very, very peculiar idea that you decided to develop for your first, for embarking in this first feature. I just want to know how everything started. What was the spark like that told you, like, okay, that's what I want to do?
That's the material. Well, it started a long time ago, actually, something like 10 or more years ago. And to tell you the truth, the film is inspired by Truman Capote's In Cold Blood. It's not inspired by the book itself, but by the event that the book is based on. And I did go into the archive of all the research that Truman Capote did at the time. But that I did 10 years ago. So 10 years ago, I already had this idea in mind somehow. Namely, when I read the book, I went back to this original event and was very much moved by this idea of this last day of life of this family of four people that is described in his book. But what I then did is go back to the original event and then re-fictionalize that in a different context, different time, different place, make it my own somehow. But, of course, still very much inspired by the real day of life that these real people who were murdered, lived, not knowing that this was going to be their last day of life. But he did this work of documenting what they did on that day. And somehow, going back into that archive material, just sort of, you know, finding the cherry pie recipe that the girl in that family back in 59 baked that day just touched me on some level. And that was the original material and the original idea. Simply this notion of a last day of life that I wanted to give life to again, somehow, re-embody.
I usually tend to watch films without informing myself about anything. And it's funny because actually I thought about In Cold Blood. It's one of my favorite books. And then I found out, you know, through some reviews and stuff that actually was based on it. But I would really wonder, as a screenplay writer as well as a director, how you tackle this idea of, like, actually giving, no, I wouldn't say homage, but, like, you know, trying to recreate the spirit of a book, but of course incorporating in a completely different environment. Which are the challenges that you, like, am I copying it too much, or am I drifting away too much?
Yeah, of course. I mean, that is probably a challenge in the beginning of the work when you don't yet know exactly where this material is going to lead you, where your own story is going to lead you somehow. But, I mean, like I said, this research started 10 years ago, but I actually set out to make this movie 2 and something years ago. It was 2 years in the making, basically, the film. I mean, from the moment I wrote the script to the moment it premiered in February this year. And so when I actually set out to make this film and I started going back into this material and trying to understand what it was that was important to me about this this material and why I had to make this film, very soon I realized that, you know, it was the original event that I was interested in and not necessarily so much what Truman Capote had made of it. Although I adore the book, of course, but the book does a very different, I mean, embarks on a whole different journey. It's about the murderers, and that's not what the film is about, precisely. But somehow it's his book that did sparkle this enthusiasm in me for this story, because reading the book, I did feel that emotion of this last day of life. But then I decided to go into my own journey and, take inspiration on these real lives and these real threads of lives and that real day that was experienced by these four people, but completely translated into something that was somehow closer to me. And at the same time, I wanted to re-fictionalize this in a whole different way somehow. I just wanted to go somewhere else with it at the same time as I was, of course, somehow paying a tribute to his work and these people who once were.
Exactly. I think there's probably just one chapter in the original book that I lingers on, like their life. But I was really fascinated by how successfully you portray this family and these last days by always. It's like you avoid the idea of like classical narrative filmmaking. So you suggest different roads and paths, but actually you leave the audience to come, you know, to join those dots or like fill the gaps. So there's different ways. Every single person in the audience could take different things or expect maybe something that is looming over, but you don't know what's happening. And this sort of way of telling your story combined with the aesthetics, which is like it's very plain, you know, like a plain thing. Also, like from the grainy digital part of it. How did you combine everything? It was actually a process of experimentation until you reached the desired aesthetics and the desired rhythm and pace of the film.
Well, there's many aspects to it. A lot of it was already in the script. The timeline that is somehow discontinued. I mean, this timeline that's split into bits and yet is only one place, one day. The repetitions, because scenes are repeated from different perspectives in the film, that was always there from the very start, not only in the script, but really in my desire to make this film. That was part of the vision, so to speak. Somehow I just wanted to create these four different and unique perspectives of these four different characters, and I felt like time and space had to be told again and again, seen from these four different characters' point of views, or not even from their point of view, but sort of in four different ways. Mm-hmm. Somehow as a way of making these unique threads of life come to life, in fact. And even though they all share one day in one same place and have the same faith, mm-hmm. at the end of that day, each of their life threads are unique. And when these four people die that evening, or that, I mean, at the end of the day, it's four individuals that come to, I mean, it's the loss is times four. Yeah. It's not just, it's, so somehow I wanted to create that individual perspective. So that was there from the start. The aesthetics as well, somehow, because I had the feeling that, like I said, I used a real event, re-fictionalized it, and then I decided to work with non-professional actors whom I cast there in that region where we were shooting, which was also, you know, this landscape, the place where we shot is almost one of the characters of the film also, in a way. And so this operation of reality, fiction, back to some sort of weird reality with these non-professional actors that bring something of their own life there and their own experience of the region, and somehow something else than just than an actor embodying a character. That was all part of the process, and it was part of the process pretty early on, I have to say. But of course, like anything, I mean, like any film, this film was very much an experiment because, well, you know, you compose with lots of different people, lots of different elements that you have a vision, but what then comes together differs maybe just a little, maybe a lot, but somehow will be different from what you had in mind. And you have to stir it again in the right direction, but of course also embrace whatever is there and whatever comes. And be able to compose with that, and so compose with these people whom I found to play these characters, compose with these locations that we found, and compose with the fact that this film was made with basically no money. I mean, it's a no-budget movie. So that was also an element that had an influence. But what was also part of it from the start in terms of the aesthetic is this something that's, you know, conceptual, clearly. I mean, there's a very conceptual aspect to the movie, something artificial on some level, even in their acting, in these images, these landscapes that feel almost fake sometimes, like you have a backdrop, but no, that's how Basilicata looks, actually. And that was also already part of it somehow, because I felt like I needed a certain level of artifice to tell the story that was a real event to begin with, but somehow that's how my emotion needed to express itself. I'm not really sure why, but it was there from the start. Yeah.
Well, we spoke about composing, so there you go, Ben. We need to also touch and dwell upon the music, which I thought it's actually an essential, always about the, we were talking about the rhythm and the pace of the film itself. And I thought the music actually, it's not, sometimes unfortunately in indie films, a lot of times it's just embellishment or just, you know, like the director writes like, here, put some drama, you know. Instead, you get a lot of, it's like an additional layer of the editing itself. I just wondered what were your first initial ideas and how you worked together to reach the final score, the final soundtrack.
Well, I'm glad, first of all, that you thought it had that effect. That was certainly the intention, to give it an extra layer, rather than just reinforcing what's there. Sarah always has quite precise ideas of where music should be. So there's never, we've done several films together, and there's never a spotting session or anything, because it says in the script where the music is going to happen. So while the road shots themselves, the way they were paced, with the road shots, I mean these traveling shots seen from a car, you know, they go on roads. They were, in the edit, the pacing was decided, but there was always going to be music on the traveling shots. And they were going to kind of punctuate the movie at strategic points. And so I had nothing to decide there. I also thought it was just a very good idea to do it that way. And then it was just about finding the right tone for these shots, because that was quite tricky, because on the one hand, you know, it's a murder story, so there's a tendency to assume that the road shots are the murderers arriving, which it is, of course, you know, and to expect there to be suspenseful music, which there is some suspense in the music, but it also had to have some sort of a transcendent or metaphysical quality, because it's not just the murderers arriving, it's also, you know, this road of life that starts and it comes to an end at some point. So it had to have these kind of, that was the dual nature of the music. And the idea was that it would go from something that is suspenseful and maybe a little bit threatening, still, you know, abstract enough to have that metaphysical quality, but mainly threatening, to something that is more metaphysical and about, you know, that has more of an existential quality. And that was the task. And really that task was clear from the very start. I then just had to kind of try to find a language and then check back with Sarah whether she thought I was on the right track. And sometimes I was and sometimes I wasn't. And then it was back to the drawing board. But mainly that was the process. You know.
One thing actually that was not, I mean, one piece of music that was not in the script to begin with is the last song, which basically came out of necessity somehow. I mean, in the editing room, I realized somehow that I needed to build this last sequence like a goodbye sequence. That's what I felt when I sort of edited the material. It wasn't exactly like that in the script originally. And that's where I felt like this operation of switching from the music being on the road shots to the music actually accompanying a sequence of images of our characters could happen. And because I felt like I needed a human voice all of a sudden. And that wasn't originally...
Originally, the concept was actually that the question was, how do we experience the murder, right? And originally, the idea was that we were never going to show, Sarah was never going to show the murder. There was never going to be any visible graphic violence. But perhaps there would be just music at the end with kind of a violent character. You know, that, and there are precedents for this kind of music and sort of... early 20th century atonal stuff, right? So that we thought that would be exactly what we were going to do. And then in the edit, it turned out that what we needed was that kind of, that very tender human sound over the characters, kind of as a farewell to them. And then there was no need anymore to suggest any violence, you know, because the work had been done at that point.
We still then have a piece in the end, right, but not as thought. I mean... The music still punctuates the film in the end. I mean, says goodbye,
right,
after the goodbye.
An epilogue. So an epilogue kind of.
Yeah.
Well, then, it's time for to say thank you. Thank you so much, guys, really, for being with us here at Fred Film Radio, the Festival Insider.
Thank you.
Thanks very much.
Fred Film Radio, 24/7 on Fred.fm and smartphone apps.